Inspiring solutions to save America, one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes. And I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program is official. So interesting. It was interesting to pay attention to Joe Biden at the State of the Union. So, you know, in the front row, in the middle of the three sections of the floor, sit in their black robes, the nine justices on the Supreme Court. And Joe Biden finger wagged them as though he should, you know, have stones to throw. And he specifically called them, he deemed them a threat to democracy if they decided to, in a case that they've decided to hear, if they made a decision that essentially exonerates the January 6 hostages and opens up the legal doors for their release. So I think this threat to democracy thing that we hear now everywhere we go, it's a threat to democracy. Everything's a threat to democracy. No, that is code for, oh, snap, crap's going sideways. We need to boogeyman this. Booga, booga, booga. Got to get people afraid. Oh, my God. Right? Got to make them afraid. That's the way it's got to be so that we can come in on the white horse and save the day. And by the way, steal everybody's freedom. So I want to read this to you from the newamerican.com. This is a very basic case. This isn't complicated. These prosecutors who have been hell-bent on beating the dead horse of January 6th to use it for their own political purposes, to create the illusion that there was an attempted overthrow of the government, that the right is unhinged. Look at what's going on. Donald Trump is also, he's guilty. He should never be allowed anywhere near governance again. They have to continue this charade. And so they load down these January 6 defendants, as we spoke with Jake Lang about. And he's so saddled by like 75 different charges on purpose. It's by design. But one of them is kind of sticky. So here's your headline. Supreme Court to hear a case that could release January 6ers. And I'm going to say this. I think so much of the insanity going on in this country, I do believe it's going to come down to the high court. I think the Supreme Court is going to have to come in and they're going to have to see, not just speaking constitutionally, judicially, but in a sane survival, saving of the republic. They're going to have to do some things to lower the temperature and to throw water on some fires that have real threat of burning out of control. So here's the story. Is the tide beginning to turn on President Biden's weaponized Department of Justice and its persecution of January 6ers? Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court dealt a death blow to various states' attempts to remove Donald Trump from their 2024 ballots. In Trump versus Anderson, The state of Colorado had accused Trump, without evidence, of course, of participating in an insurrection on January 6, 2021. Why would they need evidence? They're so used to getting away with anything. Christopher Wray is used to stonewalling and slow walking his response to congressional subpoenas. Why even participate? They believe that they are covered, that they will get protection from this corrupt government. Hunter Biden doesn't feel like he needs to show up for congressional testimony next week. Who the hell are you? Who the hell are you? SCOTUS disappointed Trump's political enemies, too, when it agreed late last month to review lower court rulings that rejected his claims of presidential immunity from criminal prosecution. They're going to hear oral arguments in that case on April 22nd, about the same time the DOJ had hoped to be convicting the former president. Isn't that a shame that you have to say that? That the DOJ had hoped to have a conviction. It's all about impugning, embarrassing, maligning, scarring, belittling, bankrupting, demonizing Donald Trump. But another January 6th case, ignored in major media, is scheduled to be heard next month too, on April 16th. Its outcome could significantly reduce the sentence of J6ers, even to the point of releasing some from prison immediately. In Fisher versus USA, the Supreme Court will decide whether the DOJ lawfully applied a section of U.S. Code known as 1512C2. It was added in the wake of the Enron scandal in 2002 and prohibits tampering with evidence or obstructing an official proceeding. The statute was written because executives at the corrupt energy company had ordered employees to shred incriminating documents. It's sort of like what Zelensky was doing, right? When Putin started invading in February of 2022, the burn pits, they weren't trying to stay warm, ladies and gentlemen. Hurry! Get rid of all of that stuff. Anything that says metabiota, get rid of it. Don't doubt me. The statute was written because executives at the corrupt energy company had ordered employees to shred incriminating documents. Conviction carries a prison sentence of up to 20 years. Now, previous case law shows a precedent of applying this particular rule only to judicial proceedings. There's another section of federal law that applies to obstruction of proceedings before other bodies, such as Congress. But it carries a sentence of not more than 5 years, which is four times lighter than this other one, which, of course, the DOJ glommed onto to throw the book at the January 6th defendants. In what appears to be a massive judicial collusion, judges in J6 cases ignored precedent and repeatedly referenced one another's cases to justify the use of the 1512C2 rule against the January 6ers, the one pushing up to 20 years in prison. Fisher versus USA involves two people convicted of violating 1512C2, but they argue the very obvious fact that the certification of a federal election is not a judicial proceeding. They believe that 1512 was applied so that exorbitant sentences could be handed down. Bing, 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 bing. The case was originally before U.S. District Court Judge Trevor McFadden in D.C., who said 1512C2 does not apply to the certification of the Electoral College count. So DOJ is challenging that ruling. The outcome is going to affect some 330 January 6 defendants, including Donald Trump, who's charged with two counts of 1512C2 violations. Now, many are optimistic because of another case decided March 1st in the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. In United States versus Brock, Circuit Judge Patricia Millett ruled that indeed Electoral College certification is not a judicial proceeding, but she went a step further than that, also ruling that many J6 defendants had improperly harsh sentencing enhancements imposed upon them, extending their prison time exponentially. The J6er in this case was Larry Brock, a 1989 graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, an A-10 Warthog pilot, and a retired Air Force lieutenant colonel with 29 years of service. He was originally sentenced to 2 years in a federal penitentiary, a high security facility usually reserved for violent criminals involved in drug trafficking. Dude's in the freaking military. He's a veteran. He served his country. He was at the Capitol on January 6th. Throw him away! So matters in regard to January 6th are not looking so rosy lately for President Biden. He's obviously worried, as evidenced by his inflammatory rhetoric before the six SCOTUS justices who attended his State of the Union speech last week. And he finger wags them throughout all. The threat to democracy must be defended. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that. You know what I want to do? I want to reach out to anybody who really believes the nonsense that they have been served from the mainstream media and from Democrats and some rhino Republicans. I would really like to sit down and go through the evidence. Because they have absolutely no idea. They've been brainwashed. They believe what they have been told. They have not heard anybody else's side of the story. That's not justice. That's not democracy. That's called one-sided, heavy-handed suck. With people like Jake Lang twisting in the wind, waiting just for their cases to go to trial for more than 3 years. So who's a bigger threat to democracy, my friends? TikTok or Joe Biden and all of the people underneath him? When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, we got to talk about this. We got to move on into Haiti. What the hell is going on in Haiti? Some guy named Barbecue is cannibalizing people and eating their what? And these people want to come to the United States? Well, what's Joe Biden doing to stop them? Not much. Next. All right, so we talked a little bit about TikTok. I don't think we need to get into the weeds on TikTok. You're going to have some people who are like, yeah, some people are, nah. The bigger picture has less to do with TikTok and more to do with control. Now, this thing in Haiti is interesting on another level because it feels like Haiti is 10 years ahead of where we're going to be if the current border situation is allowed to continue the way it is. Where you have widespread, rampant breaking of the law facilitated and invited by this administration and all of that. So what is going on in Haiti? The most recent bout of violence. Basically, you've got a collapsed government, widely known as being corrupt, collapsed government. And then all this violence breaks out after the guy who was in charge left the country on a trip to Kenya to ask the United Nations for some support in fighting Haiti's long-standing gang problem. So when he was out of the country, armed gangs organized this massive prison break. And this notorious cop-turned-gang leader, Jimmy Chariser, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. All you need to know is he goes by the moniker Barbecue. He became the movement's public face, announcing that his so-called federation called G9 Family and Allies was going to be working with all these other gangs to force this leader's resignation. These criminals then set fire to the police station. They gained access to the capital city's main shipping port. Their looting is now running rampant, and it's total madness. Gunfire and attacks have forced citizens to flee the city or hunker down in their homes. Hospitals have closed, food, water, medical supplies, certainly running thin. And the United Nations officials, if you can believe them, which I doubt you can, estimate that these gangs now have control about 80% of Port-au-Prince, which is up from 60% in recent years and has driven about 15,000 people from their homes. So now they're apparently on these boats, and the Biden administration, we understand, is facilitating the transport of a hell of a lot of these people from Haiti to mainland United States via Florida. And that is where Matt Gaetz is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't think so. I want to play this for you because there is something that can be done to stop these people from gaining access to our country. Because the minute they stand on our soil, they can say they are seeking asylum. They are fleeing, obviously, a dangerous situation. And then all of a sudden they become ensconced in our social welfare net and we add them to the bill. Here is Matt Gaetz. Listen to this.
Is this actually going to happen? Another mass wave of Haitian boat people?
Certainly. Haiti is a failed state right now. The Biden administration officials I was speaking with couldn't distinguish Haiti from a failed state. And we know that is the number one push factor that sends thousands of people into the Florida Straits onto Florida shores. And here's the legal status of those folks. If we interdict them at sea, we are able to pull right up to a dock at Port-au-Prince as a consequence of our agreements there, let them out, and they are never part of the immigration system. If they make it to shore, they're able to claim that they fear their conditions in Haiti, they can seek asylum, and that further clogs that system. So
I guess to be fair, interdiction at sea is key. To be fair, who wouldn't have real fear about what's happening in Haiti? The place is run by a guy named Barbecue.
Yeah, I just don't want Southeast Florida to become Haiti. Mm. And what's different about a lot of the Haitian migrants that show up is that they don't disperse evenly throughout the country. They often stay in communities in Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach counties. So that means a huge burden on our jails, on our hospitals, our school systems, and the violence that you see from some of these folks is horrendous. When I talked to the Border Patrol and Coast Guard folks, they told stories of these folks like pouring gasoline on little babies on these flotillas to try to deter aborting. And the reason Joe Biden isn't doing enough is because he hasn't yet declared an anticipated state of a mass migration over water. If he were to do that, we could get naval vessels in the Florida Straits to deter this migration. We could take action now. The Biden administration is not doing it. Bravo, Ron DeSantis, for getting some force posture in place. But remember, those folks will only encounter the Haitians once they've landed and have a right to claim asylum. If Biden did the right thing, they'd be right back in Port-au-Prince.
So George W. Bush in 2000, he used this particular statute and he asked the Navy to do exactly what Matt Gaetz is saying that should be done right now. Stop these people from getting here. We cannot be the solution to everybody's problems. But it goes deeper than that. Because you remember, what was it, 14 years ago? Was it 2010, that awful earthquake? And then Bill and Hillary Clinton and their Crime Family Foundation sweeps in under the guise of humanitarian aid and Democrat do-goodery. Raise money. We'll have live aid. What did that do for the people of Haiti? Nothing. Made things worse. It's almost like wherever our sucky government decides to meddle, that place falls apart. It's a dizzying track record. And by the way, you should pretty much be done footing the bill for all of this. So we're going to talk about what's going on, what can be done, and we're going to go back in time. Let's go in the Wayback Machine and remember those, such good people. Let's give to Haiti. Where'd the $1 billion go, Bill and Hill? Let's talk about it next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio Program. So the situation going on in Haiti is horrendous. You have rampant lawlessness. You have corrupt leadership. And you have the people in the middle paying the price. It is the story of far too common tales these days. And I feel like we are looking into a future tunnel, seeing what will be in just a handful of years if we allow what is going on in our country with our borders, with rampant lawlessness, with allowing anybody and his brother to come in, no questions asked, no follow-up needed, and then an administration that lies through their teeth about it, blaming other people, saying they don't have power to stop it when they are the ones who created it, who invited it. I mean, that is as corrupt as you can be. You don't have to go to Haiti to find corruption. I mean, look all around. The collateral damage, of course, the men and women in the community and their children who are put in danger. I mean, really, if you think about it, are we all that far away? Matt Gaetz was in a House Armed Services hearing earlier this week, and we're going to play a couple audio sound bites for him. But before the most salient points about Haiti is it is a corrupt country. And I think we could probably say most are, but it has corrupt leadership and problems that have been stewing for a while. You've got lawlessness. You've got gangs. You have violence. Now you have indiscriminate looting, fires, theft, you know, raping, pillaging, cannibalizing of people, barbecuing their bodies. Like it's barbaric. It's October 7th. It's dastardly. It is offensive. It is indefensible. And Joe Biden wants to bring these people over to the United States because that makes sense. How? I don't know how. It doesn't. But it's all part of this stew of suck that you and I are simmering in. And I thought it would be prudent because I think we all remember the horrible earthquake. And in Pittsburgh, where I live, I was the evening news anchor at the local ABC affiliate when that earthquake struck. And there was a story that we followed of sisters in a Pittsburgh community who went over and volunteered in a humanitarian capacity in Haiti and then brought back with them an orphan, a little boy. And everybody kind of fell in love with this story, oh, do-goodery and all this stuff. I have to tell you, there is so much more corruption when the United States gets involved in some kind of a refugee or saving mission because it's always a grift. And if the Clintons are involved, you can count on the grift. So we found this article in thesetimes.com. And just so we're all on the same page about what's going on as we look through the lens of what's coming. On boats to our shores, to land in Florida, to claim asylum. I mean, hundreds of how many people are going to come? What is going to stop them? Who are these people? What did they do in the past? Are these people who have been released from prison who are now going to come here and they're going to make madness and chaos at a time where our police are woefully depleted, woefully and grossly underfunded, and depending on where you live, it's just not safe, all by design. So, you know, 14 years ago, we pledged to help Haiti rebuild. That's the head of this title of this article. And then what happened? Hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, billions of dollars in aid went to U.S. corporations and the U.S. military. A fraction went to Haitian institutions. Tell me how Ukraine is any different right now. How much of our money that they just randomly and indiscriminately, purposefully and predictably wave a magic wand and pass without our okay is actually getting into the hands of anybody on the ground in Ukraine who needs to eat and find a shelter and survive the winter. How much? A dearth, a scintilla, a fraction of a smidgen of a speck, probably. So let's read this. The earthquake that struck Haiti January 12, 2010, unleashed one of the worst humanitarian crises in history. In hard-hit places like Port-au-Prince, Haiti's capital and most densely populated city, schools and medical centers collapsed. More than 300,000 homes were damaged or destroyed. The disaster is estimated to have killed at least 220,000 Haitians, displacing more than 2 million others, about a quarter of the population. It also unleashed this unprecedented humanitarian response. Charity groups, private individuals, governments around the world offering support. United Nations conference in New York in March of 2010. 58 donors pledged more than $8 billion to help Haiti, wait for it, build back better. Huh. Reducing the nation's vulnerability to future disasters. The United States made the biggest pledge. Of course. Of course. It's not their money. It's your freaking money. Oh, we're going to give the most. The biggest pledge of any nation, promising $1.15 billion. Who was then Secretary of State? Oh, that's right, Hillary Rodham Clinton. She emphasized Haiti's urgent needs, safe homes, food security, basic services that were not broadly accessible even before the earthquake, including health care, potable water, and a national system of sanitation. So 14 years later, how's it going? It didn't go anywhere. Nothing got better. There weren't structures that were sufficient that were built. Where did the money go? In fact, the United States, the Congress ultimately approved more than $1.6 billion for emergency humanitarian relief, more than $1.14 billion for recovery. The United States went on to finance other Haitian development projects, bringing the total in post-earthquake commitments to almost $4.16 billion. You know, it's a paltry amount compared to what we've given Ukraine. What's that number up to? $120 billion now? More than that, $200 billion? Do you see? We're gonna have something. It's the threat to democracy. Got to have something, that boogeyman, right? Got to have something happen, whether it's a natural disaster that you can glom onto, or if it's war that you help foment, right? That you actively send somebody in Boris Johnson over to Ukraine to basically stop any kind of peace talk and thwart any kind of prevention of war. Because crises are phenomenal grifting opportunities, specifically for your industrial, you know, military complex, and for people like the Clintons or the Bushes or who else? Oh, that's right, the Bidens, to make a hell of a lot of money. So let's go. That is the retrospective. We're going to give all this money. Nothing's going to get better. Nothing's going to change. People aren't going to have more opportunity. It's the same way that they say things to the Black community here in the United States. Oh my gosh, there's this huge problem. The only way to solve it is to spend gobs of money on it. That hasn't improved education. It hasn't improved the state of living in any of these communities. People are in the same dire straits they were in before, except now there are not enough police to patrol. And so random indiscriminate violence is costing more people their freaking lives. There aren't cops to make things safe. And so what you have as you look through the looking glass is Haiti on the horizon. I want you to hear Matt Gaetz. So he's at this House Armed Services hearing, and he asks this woman, he's specifically speaking to a woman named Rebecca Zimmerman. She is the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Homeland Security and Hemispheric Defense. I didn't know there was such a thing, but there is, of course, in bureaucracy. And he's obviously talking about, look, we can't be an open door for everybody and his brother. The United States, if Hank Johnson has his way, is going to tip over. It's going to capsize with all of the people coming. Now, obviously, he didn't say that, not Matt Gaetz. But he says he's super worried about what's going on. And he says this. Go.
The gangs are in charge. The government has been thrown out. And as a Florida man, I'm deeply concerned about this wave of people that we're about to have, that we are having, coming from Haiti. And it will accelerate because I've gone to Opa-locka and I've spent time with the folks that are engaged in Operation Vigilant Sentry. And they say the number one push factor that drives these Haitians into Broward County, Palm Beach County, where they don't disperse throughout the country, they stay in Southeast Florida, that driving factor is the deterioration of conditions in Haiti. So what are we doing to prepare for that wave and to ensure that these people are not paroled into the United States as the administration has done with people on the southern border, but instead are repatriated back at the dock at Port-au-Prince?
You guys remember when the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan went down and we lost 13 U.S. service members? They had those big aircraft and the pictures inside of all sorts of people, all sorts of Afghanis packed inside trying to get out of their country, coming to the United States. This is happening by boat now from Haiti to Florida, right? And if we think about how successful this project is, remember that 14 years after that earthquake in Haiti, even after the billions of dollars we gave them, more than 34,000 Haitians who lost their homes still don't have a place to live. They live in so-called displacement camps. and 300,000 Haitians have migrated to new slums that lack health care and potable water. Listen to this woman, Rebecca Zimmerman, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Homeland Security and Hemispheric Defense, respond. She basically has no response. There is no plan because they suck. And this is what they want. Go.
We've recently approved some additional assistance that we can provide to the Coast Guard. I think that that has now fully been approved. We'll be providing notifications if we haven't already provide additional shipboard assistance.
Because I've talked to the Coast Guard, and what they say would really support them would be more naval vessels, would be DOD support. And because I think you correctly said that there is an anticipated mass migration here, there are specific legal authorities that we can access that I would implore you to access. Specifically, George W. Bush signed Executive Order 13276. And in that executive order, there is the ability for any president to designate an anticipated mass migration and then get gray hull naval vessels into the Straits of Florida to deter that migration and then to repatriate those people before they get to Florida.
Matt Gaetz is saying it purposefully. It's already been done. One president already did it. It's on the books. It worked. This is the only way. You sang, Madam Assistant Secretary, that, well, we think we've gotten some resources for the Coast Guard. That ain't going to do it, sister. You've got hundreds of thousands of freaking Haitians who want to come to America. And if the DOD isn't going to send out the Navy warships, all you need to know is that this is calculated and this is going exactly as planned. This is what they want. To destroy America. You know what? If you want a poster child, you want to see the beginning of what this looks like, I'm going to tell you about my home city, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Already a crap hole. Coming up next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. You know, I want to read you this article, dailywire.com. Matt Walsh did this, and he's right. If you follow the news out of Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh this week, you know that this moment of basically lawlessness and the potential for anything to happen, like Haiti, has already arrived. This is my neighborhood. The city has announced that Pittsburgh police officers will simply stop responding to the vast majority of crimes, including burglary and harassment, as long as there's no, quote, in-progress emergency. Additionally, between 3 and 7 a.m., as few as 20 police officers will be on duty to cover the city, entire population of about 300,000 people. This is as close to real life implementation of basically the purge of reality and common sense as we've seen. Now, what all this means is that if somebody breaks into your house in Pittsburgh, you can call 911. Nobody's coming. Even if your alarm is like, not coming. Sorry, we don't have the staff. Why is that? Because our former mayor, Bill Peduto, is a man of abject suck, who decided to jump on the George Floyd defund the police bandwagon and basically squelch recruiting of police officers and the demonizing of them during the pandemic. And this is what you get. This is what you get when you live in a Democrat hellscape. If I'm not mistaken, there is not one single Republican on the Pittsburgh school board. There is not one single Republican who's on the county council. There's not one single Republican in the city council. This is what you get. If you're in Pittsburgh and you're a Republican, go screw yourself. Democrats are in charge. How you liking it? So your alarm is blaring. Your alarm company is notifying the authorities. They don't care. And you know, I'd like to say this. The police came out and they held a press conference so they could tell everybody that this is going on. Hey, just so you know, between 3 and 7, ain't nobody coming. Now, on the one hand, I wanted to choke somebody at the Pittsburgh Police Bureau and be like, hey, dummies, you've just projected to everybody in the world who's a criminal. This is a really good time for you to break into homes. Make sure you do it between these hours because there's only 20 cops on duty for 300,000 people. Woefully inadequate. But what was their alternative? They didn't have a choice. With this highly litigious society, no cops came to my house. Well, we told you. Now we've got some cover. So the police chief in Pittsburgh has clarified that for burglaries under this new policy, They need some sort of second verification in order to ensure that the burglar is on the premises at the moment before police will even consider driving out to your house. It's like two-factor authentication for your bank account, right? Except there's somebody breaking in your house. And you're supposed to do what? Take a picture and haphazardly find the website and email it to your cops, your local police precinct? What are you talking about? That is the dumbest thing I've heard today. And that's saying something, because we were talking about TikTok, and that's pretty stupid. Maybe you can take a quick selfie video with the burglar where he looks at the camera and says, "Hey, folks, just here burglarizing this home real quick. Sorry for the inconvenience." Outside of situations like that, Pittsburgh police will just tell you, leave a report with their answering service. We already went through this just about 3 weeks ago when my son's Ford Explorer was crowbarred. They tried to get into it. I guess one of the few benefits of driving a Ford Explorer is that it's hard to break into. And so they try. You can't like just shatter the windows. It's not easy. You can tell that they tried. Somebody tried. And it looks like, you know, like when you toe pick the ice in an ice skating rink, that's what it looked like on Michael's driver's side door. And then they took the crowbar and they tried to pry it in on the top, right? $2,000 damage later, we call the cops, try to file a police report, had to leave a message. Nobody even got back in touch with us. It's not surprising. This is where we are. Now, of course, if the burglar is smart in the city of Pittsburgh and breaks into your home between the hours of 3 and 7, probably doesn't even matter. And all of you, "I don't like guns. They're so unsafe. We need to get rid of all guns." You're damn well going to want to wish you had one. What are you going to do? Get your cast iron skillet out and stand in the shadows waiting to bonk somebody over the head? Look, I'm going to tell you right now. I was home alone during a home invasion. Home alone. There's a side of me that's glad I didn't have a gun at that point, because that man would have been dead in the foyer of my home after kicking in a back French door and shattering the door with such violence the lock for it flew about 50 feet. As it was, I was so freaked out, I dialed 411. Right? How are you going to handle the emergency when they show up at your house? What are you going to do besides not call directory assistance? What's going to happen? What's going to happen to your children? What's going to happen to your wife or your husband? Or God forbid you live with your parents. What's going to happen with them? Well, sorry. We defunded the police. Felt like a good thing to do, even though it was all predicated on a lie. A lie that a police officer killed a man, and he didn't. But don't worry about that now. Well, you play the cards you're dealt. Can you say mass exodus? It's what's going on in New York. It's what's going on in San Francisco. And it's what's going on in Pittsburgh. I'm next. Done. Not playing anymore. It's not safe. It's not reasonable. And now we have a socialist who is our county executive, a socialist who's trying to bring back ballot drop boxes. Super. Where do you live? Is it a Democrat-run hellscape yet? Because there's a good chance it will be if you don't wake up real fast and get involved in your local elections. Of course, it happens at the local level. Now, when we come back, holy moly, already hour number 3. You guys are amazing. I want to talk about this. So how are things really going in Joe Biden's America? Because he waxed poetic about all the wonderful things he's done as State of the Union. Well, I've got some hardcore examples for you. Even you might not know about. Why would you ever vote Democrat? Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network.